WNST, Tulsa, Baltimore, and Baltimore. Positive. We are into a new year. It will not be a year where the Ravens win the Super Bowl. I can probably go so far as say it won't be a year where the Orioles win the World Series. I don't know about the Terps. They probably got a chance in lacrosse and all sorts of things. Probably not in football so much. But we talk championships and we talk local teams and local sports and media plays and WBAL has big announcements and the Washington football team's going to make a name. And lo and behold, it's been like 3 months since I've had Marty Conway on here. Last time I had Marty on, the Ravens were going to the playoffs, I think. The good professor at Georgetown and one-time executive of the Baltimore Orioles, they played baseball back in the day, although you lived through a couple of those work stoppages, Marty. I know you probably find this to be oddly familiar, and all that. How are you? I know you had COVID, brother. Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, all that good stuff. Are you feeling all right, bro?
Yeah, feeling better. Happy to have been as vaccinated as many times as you can be and also have a flu shot and everything else that you could possibly have. But it still finds people and it found us so over Christmas time. So, but you know, knock on wood, everybody's doing better. And so get your vaccinations, take care of yourself, stay healthy and you'll be all right.
I'm getting my booster Friday. And I signed, and you know, I thought you could just like go get it and like, no, you know, none of the places had it last week. I mean, you know, I thought we were in the United States of America. We're number one and all that stuff, but we'll get to all that, stay on to the sports side of things. Boy, so much has happened. I don't even know where to begin with you. Baseball's on strike. Obviously, the Ravens flew down the mountain. The Washington football team can't keep the railing up. I mean, it literally never ends, does it?
No, we almost feel like we're back to where we were a year ago, right? Which is we've got teams in Canada who are not going to have fans in the stands for the next few weeks. We've got proof of vaccinations required at University of Maryland. I think that's something that could come to, you know, other locations as well, particularly indoor locations. And so I'm not quite sure how much ground we've gained on the last year, but I do think it proves this one thing is we are never going back. Like this is not we're going to try to work ourselves back to late 2019, early 2020. From a sports standpoint, that's just not going to happen. There's been millions, and I say hundreds of million dollars of losses incurred by teams and leagues and events. I think this is just going to change the way that people do business. I think you'll see some more team sales upcoming this year as things start to balance out a little bit. I think this has changed this last 2 years, COVID pandemic, epidemic, has changed the sports business landscape forever, and we'll see who can do better in the new scenario compared to the old way we did it.
Let's take the gloves off here. Bisciotti's closer to selling it than keeping it, and I have good sources on that says he's not going to own this forever. Probably not interested in firing a coach. Probably not interested in doing the replacement for Dick Cass and finding Sharpies like you out there that may want to come run the whole operation. And certainly not going to have any upheaval with the scouting department or be firing Eric and finding a new Ozzy or bringing in a new football department. I don't know where the baseball thing is, and we can get to that in a minute. But first and foremost, you start talking about teams being sold. I really believe the Ravens won't be owned by Steve Bisciotti 5 years from now. I don't know that it'll be 5 minutes from now or 5 months from now, but I really believe 5 years from now, Steve will have an exit strategy sometime between now and then that will include Mr. Big or whoever the next owner is going to be. And I do feel like there's going to be a changing of the guard here soonish, all the way around the baseball side, all of this. And to your point, the genie's not going back in the bottle. We're not bringing 3.6 million people back to Camden Yards, blah, 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 blah. All those things that I pine away for, as Ken Rosenthal is getting thrown out of Major League Baseball from my days back with you. It's never coming back. And to some degree, it's never going to be the same again, because I think lots of changes for Baltimore sports over the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. It's going to be massive changes here.
Yeah, look, we've had a period of the Angelos family has owned the Orioles longer than any other ownership group up to this point, right? So we've had this period. We've had Steve Bisciotti involved for, decades or more now. And so we've gotten comfortable with that current system. But let's point out that from a financial standpoint, if you look at the NBA and the NHL, they are taking in money from public private equity funds, not individual owners, but private equity funds. The NBA has taken in 3, 4, or 5. The NHL has taken in a few. That's the strongest indication that those minority limited partners no longer have the money to contribute to go forward. And so they are selling pieces of their equity in order to raise and generate new
minority cash. Partners, the people we don't know about, right?
That's right. That's right. And those have been hard to find because why would you invest money without the ability ultimately to control the franchise? So you've seen it in the NBA and you've seen it in the NHL, where I think they have been more at risk because they're dependent upon gated revenues. They're lesser dependent upon media revenues. But look, the Cleveland Indians recently are selling a third or 40% of their team to replace the minority owner who went to buy the Kansas City Royals. That's going to value that team at about $1.4 billion. And that's a searchlight. That's like the big searchlight in Batman that says to everybody else, here's what these teams are worth. Here's an idea of what these are worth. And so as you start to think about succession planning, family planning, look, the NFL is largely controlled by about 25 families that have been in that business for a long time and probably will stay in that business. Then there's 4, 5, or 6 like Steve Bisciotti, like some others that might have come along and said, you know, this is a great investment, but it's not something that I see my family staying involved in, like the Crafts and other people like that. And so, you know, occasionally you're going to see these teams come up for sale. And now you have an idea. The Denver Broncos, I think, are going to go on the market in the first two quarters of 2022. And if that generates a $3 to $4 billion price tag, that's an indication to everybody else in the NFL, approximately high or low, what your team is worth. And so that's what owners are looking at right now, is what kind of exit opportunities are there. You can never say your team's never for sale, because somebody can walk up and say, here's what we're willing to sell it to you, to buy it from. And at that point, everybody has a price.
$3 billion on the Ravens, right? $3
billion? I think so. And I think a lot of it's going to be determined by what the sale price is for the Broncos. They're in a slightly larger market. They have a really rapid fan base, a really solid fan base. And so most people think that's going to be in excess of $3 billion, maybe approaching $4 billion. Remember, the Carolina Panthers sold for about $2.25 billion a few years ago to David Tepper. And so Denver's larger than that. And so that's a pretty good indication. You got new media deals, keep in mind, 10-year deals that in a few years from now will provide each team over $300 million annually in just media revenues from national. So figure that out. Put a 6 or 7 multiple just on that revenue alone, and you're looking at $2 billion. And that doesn't even take into account what you generate locally and tickets and all the other kind of things. So I think it's easily to see the Ravens being worth $3 billion in the very near future.
Marty Conway is here. He is the good professor at Georgetown University. You should be following him on Twitter as well as LinkedIn if you're into the business of sports and how a sausage is made after the holidays. We're into 2022 now. I mean, I could bring this back to the NFL, and I guess we should stay on it because I want to go to baseball. And but the Washington football team situation and the Admirals or the Generals or whatever they're going to call themselves, I guess we're going to find that out soon enough. But the ability for the franchise to stay in his control, that the league is sort of rolled over on the side of they're going to defend him instead of throw him to the wolves. I know you and I talked about this maybe 2 or 3 months ago when it was a little more, the embers were a little hotter at that time than they are now. And you would always say, in the same way that Andrew Brandt or anybody else, just let it go a day. You'll even get away with an insurrection in this country. You could storm the Capitol and a year later make up stories about what people didn't see or did see, that they'll believe it. I think the same thing's true in sports. Whatever Antonio Brown did this weekend won't stop him from putting on another jersey next year, because we really do have some weird sort of amnesia because things move so quickly through all of this. But boy, the Daniel Snyder thing, I mean, what a scumbag. I mean, just all the way around. And the fact that the lawyers have been tied up in this and the cheerleaders, and now they're going to defend themselves against Gruden on these emails. I mean, they are really dug in, right? I mean, the owners in the league on how they're going to deal with all of this. They wrote the check for St. Louis. I don't know how that's going to work with Gruden and with these emails and Congress.
Yeah, Yeah, I've said that the Washington football team, John Gruden email thing is like Watergate for the NFL. I think it's going to be dribs and drabs. I think the people at Washington Post and New York Times and others are going to continue to stay on this story for some time, which is why it's very difficult for them to announce on February 2nd, by the way, Groundhog Day, that they are going to announce a new name and trademark and whatever they're going to do on that. But like I said on Twitter, if Lenny and Landover, instead of Punxsutawney Phil, is going to stick his head out and see 20 more years of the same guy owning the team, I don't know how much is going to change, no matter what name and logo goes on the helmet, different things like that, because they haven't dealt with the real issue there, which is the sort of corrosiveness of ownership and not literally going back to, a few years ago, the incident on the airplane, the issues that have had with their cheerleaders, the incidents with people in the front office for the last 5 or 8 years, and say, look, we're going to settle these. If people want to talk publicly about them, we're going to let them do that. We're going to settle. We're going to go back to square one and start from there. The damage that they've done is they've tried to sort of paper over that, right? They've tried to say, let's change the subject. Let's change the team name. Let's do some other things.
Well, they
like
have
that.
A lawyer and a spokesperson for every occasion, except all of it's bullshit. Yeah. You know what I mean? Nobody believes any of it.
Yeah. And so the NFL and the owners and stakeholders of the NFL, the networks and others, they've contorted themselves into pretzel-like positions to try to defend something that's frankly indefensible, and probably defend somebody that's probably indefensible, because ultimately, just as Mark Cuban said a few years ago when something was laid at his door on the Mavericks and the Donald Sterling thing, and he said, let's be careful, because today we're coming for Donald Sterling, tomorrow they might be coming for us. And that is their biggest concern as a group of business people together, ownership. Because keep this in mind, I've said this now recently, that the NFL is now getting itself to 20, 25, soon to be a $30 billion entity, probably the largest entity in our country with virtually no oversight, right? You have the SEC for public companies. You have the FTC for products and services.
FCC for little radio
FCC
holders
for
here.
Communications, right? You say to yourself, where does the NFL go for oversight? And at this point, it's the best business to be in, because there's virtually, you have to really, 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 if you look at some of the things that have happened in the past, they have to get bad before Congress is willing to call people down and talk to them on the record. But without oversight, without some oversight body of sports, I think this is going to continue. And as these entities get bigger and football continues to get to be the biggest, that's where the issue is. Without an oversight board, without any kind of oversight panel, I think these things will just continue to foment, and the owners are just going to protect themselves. And Roger Goodell's in the position of having to be the spokesman for that.
Well, boy, baseball's gotten away with this for years, right? I mean, like, it feels like 5 minutes ago with Mark McGwire and not here to talk about the past, and Rafael Palmeiro and Schilling and all them coming in, and Sammy Sosa, no speaky and all that. We're going on 2 decades for that, right? Like, it's not every day that they get corralled in for this, but no. Antitrust is really where this begins. And then just the fact that the business practices, right? Just straight up business, how they're running their business. No one is overseeing that. And I wonder how much chief Congress even has over something like the NFL, where they sort of gaslight their way and lobby their way into positions where they didn't blackball Colin Kaepernick in front of the whole world, which they did.
Yeah, well, Major League Baseball has their antitrust exemption to defend, and that's why they go to Congress like that. The NFL has no antitrust exemption to defend, so they're less concerned about that. But in talking with some friends who are now connecting to people on Capitol Hill and potentially having some hearings about the Washington football team, the one glaring thing that they've told me individually is how little these members and their staff members actually know about the NFL or sports. I had a colleague brief some of those folks recently, and he came away and said it was shocking how little they actually knew about what has gone on or the business itself and how the business actually works. And so once they get a little bit more understanding of how it works, I think they will want to have some sort of hearings. And that's what concerns the NFL ultimately, is in the case of the Washington football team. Because I say this last thing about the Washington football team is the ownership and the location of that stadium for decades and decades was a place that Washington felt comfortable going to, right? Ambassadors, heads of state, visiting heads of state, military people would go and feel comfortable being viewed in the owner's box, being there on game day, et cetera. And that was something that the NFL felt was important to have a friend in Washington in terms of ownership. That's all gone, right? There's no congressman, no senator, no ambassador, nobody involved in the cabinet is interested now in going to the football game and being photographed, you know, at the 50-yard line or in their suite. That's the one problem that the NFL has in its current situation, of which I'm sure they're concerned about, because every so often, just like they go to the markets, the media markets in New York, occasionally they have to come to Washington for something, and they want to make sure that they have friends in D.C. And right now, I think there's a big question about that, which is if there's anything that would push Daniel Snyder out, it could be that.
Well, CTE was the thing that got Goodell and all those guys brought in really the last time, right? And they made movies about that people saw and went the other way, and we still go watch them crack skulls, and guys like me 30 years later start to find broken down football players that I know, that you know, that we knew, who've had these issues. Marty Conway is here. We love talking about the business of sports with Marty. You can find him out on Twitter and on LinkedIn. He's the good professor at Georgetown University, longtime Baltimore Orioles. Something magic happens. You know, BAL's moving things around. By the time they hear this, they may be the flagship. I don't think that's the announcement, but certainly the Orioles have not made a lot of announcements. The fact that Major League Baseball is shut down and that they can't talk about their actual players on their team website. And lo and behold, Ken Rosenthal gets fired on Monday morning to start the new year by Rob Manfred. Listen, I've got my own issues with how the Ravens have been handling PR, the NFL, how the media has been muted along the way, and all my Free the Birds nonsense from 15 years ago. But baseball's in like a whole different place right now. They're like, they're not in business right now, right? Like, they literally cannot conduct their business because of their own infighting at this point.
Yeah, there are two seasons. Most people don't talk in this way, but there's the playing season in baseball, and then there's the selling season, otherwise known as the off season. If you worked in the industry, any of the individual in sports industries, you know that there is no off season. That's actually, in fact, one of your busier times, because it is the selling season for next year. And so, to your point, that's what they have done, is they've stuck a needle in that big balloon of the selling season, and put teams in a position of literally, and I know having gone through this more than once now, of you can go to the market and you can talk to your friends and your colleagues and your business partners, but you have to talk in generalities, because you don't really know what's going to start, when it's going to start, what that oversight is. Now, on the one hand, we saw almost $2 billion transacted in the 48 hours prior to this lockout beginning in December the 2nd. So I think both sides feel comfortable that the main economic system is going to remain about the same. You would not have seen teams sign multi-year deals with Max Scherzer and others for, you know, $40 million a year if they didn't feel that way. On the other hand, there are issues that are such that the players feel like most of the money now is being concentrated in a few hands. I think there's something like 35 players on current major league rosters that absorb about 50% of all the salaries in Major League Baseball. That's a huge problem for the players. That's a huge problem in any economic system when a few people get to control most of the wealth. That's when you start to see. So as I said, back in 94, 95, 96, when we had our problems and I was in Texas, the issue primarily was how the owners were going to share revenues, not so much with the players, but how they were going to split the money themselves. Now I think that issue is on the player side, which is revenues have increased, player salaries have increased, but they're going to fewer and fewer players, and they're turning to the owners and saying, hey, we'd like one less year before you get to free agency. We'd like some of these other changes. And the owners are saying, hey, we're still paying you more than we ever did, and we're controlling things that we can control. And I think that's where the issues are. But locally for teams, I know the Orioles are announcing their plans for their 30th anniversary of Camden Yards, which should be a really big deal. But if you're going to go into February and early March, not knowing when you're going to start, it just takes a lot of shine and removes a lot of opportunity in a situation in Baltimore where they need a better offseason. They need better conditions because we know the last 3 or 4 years, attendance-wise and revenue-wise, haven't been favorable to the team.
Any big picture update on this? I mean, every time I get together with somebody smart like you, like the team's not in jeopardy, team's not going anywhere. I'm like, how long is the team going to sit here and have no one care about it and lose 100 games? I mean, hey, you know, Manfred's not saying anything about this. John Angelos isn't out in front of it. Peter's eating pudding. I mean, we're into another year of nothingness. I can go back to 2017 and 18 and say the same thing, Marty. I wonder, we were at the point where, like, will there be a 31st year in Camden Yards? They need to negotiate this thing. They're an 18-month lease, and they're out of business right now. It's unthinkable. People wonder why I'm leaving downtown.
Yeah, it does happen. Unfortunately, it does happen in baseball from time to time, which is baseball has such that they really don't want to disturb things, you know, and I say this because you know what's going on with the Orioles franchise is pretty evident that Peter's health is, you know, in a state of decline, steadily decline, and they're sort of waiting for something else to occur. This has happened in the past in Detroit when the Fetzers owned the team and Mr. Fetzer got old and wasn't involved. The Yawkeys for a long time, Mr. Yawkey got old, Mrs. Yawkey came, got involved, but they didn't really want to disturb the way the franchise ran. But as soon as there was a change in the health status of the owner, then things began to move. And so that's been baseball's MO for a long time, which is if you've owned the team for a long time and they get to these delicate situations, they tend to just to sort of ignore it and leave it there knowing. But I can assure you, talking to people in Major League Baseball and other, they are poised waiting for whatever opportunity is going to occur in Baltimore because they do want to see some vibrant ownership, some investment in the city, maybe some additional investment in the stadium to occur because that's going to be good for baseball and ultimately get the All-Star game back to Baltimore and a few other things that can start to reshape that curve, which right now has been bending, you know, down and to the right too much.
Well, they better figure out how to get back on the field, right? I mean, they better figure this out because this is ugly. And as you know, when these lawyers get in the room, I mean, they barely got to the field 2 summers ago, right? I mean, the fighting they did in May and June at the early part of the pandemic, it sort of set the table and the tone for what this is. And everybody I've talked to who's smart remembers Mark Belanger and these tough SOBs that were not going to give an inch. I wonder how united a bunch of millennial kids are going to be to help Adley Rutschman along. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, and you're right about that, which is to say that typically what's going to happen here is they're going to negotiate those early February practices, early February, late February games, early March games. They're so meaningless in the scheme. But I think the one thing that the players did learn from that 2020 COVID lockout sort of period, which is they would be concerned about what's the length of spring training they need to start. That was all of a sudden there were 200 or 300 free agents that had to be signed. There were a number of things that had to occur. And so that rush back isn't something that they want to see again. So I think that bullseye is somewhere in the mid-February timeframe when you start to see more round-the-clock meetings and they start to wear down. I would guess right now, knowing collective bargaining a little bit, that they have been meeting, solving some of the smaller issues about, you know, meal money and rooms and different things like that that might need a tweak. But it's all going to come down to a handful of these economic issues, maybe around the designated hitter in both leagues, maybe the size of rosters. But primarily, it's going to be around this 6-year free agency, trying to limit teams from tanking for a few years, maybe a minimum salary, certain things like that, that ultimately that's where most of the heat is going to occur. But yeah, you get to mid and late February, Max Scherzer wants to be in camp throwing so that on March 26th, and he's the opening day starter for the Mets, he's not risking his arm by throwing 5 or 6 innings on that day.
Marty Conway is here. He is the good professor at Georgetown University. You can find him at Marty Conway out on the social media thing. All right, sort of last thing that I sort of can throw at you here is COVID and the effect on college sports. And as you're wearing your Cincinnati Bearcats top there, and we've got national football, Georgia versus Alabama. Who knew? SEC, right? the college thing for me has been the most diminished of all of this. I wasn't watching a whole lot of NBA when it started. Hockey's kind of come and gone for me. The NFL, I'm all in like everybody else. Baseball, you know, if the team were better, you know, I guess we could all say that for the investment of time. But what's going on at Maryland with their football program and this pinstripe thing where they all run off to New York and they're still scoring touchdowns, right? And feeling good about themselves and we're better than the ACC and all of that. And then they're going to be looking for a basketball coach. You know, Turgeon just leaves the keys under the mat before Christmas and says, see ya. You know, it's just, it's been strange all the way around with college sports, but getting back on the court. You mentioned COVID protocols, games being canceled left and right. I know you carry a whistle around a large part of the winter and, you know, adjudicating said games and basketball games and whatnot. College sports has really taken a backseat to, in my mind, to the theater of what sports represents here, unless your kid's in the band or your kid's on the volleyball team. I'll hear all that. But I think just for time and space and what I'm willing to go risk myself in COVID, whether it's Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden, and I still might do that before once I get my third shot. But college sports has really taken a hit, I think.
Yeah, and look, keep in mind, they were struggling. In 2019, one of the subjects that we were talking about openly was people not showing up to college games. Nick Saban was talking about the lack of fans at noon games. The live event industry and college athletics in particular was struggling with getting people to there because students had different ideas and tailgating.
Well, let's be honest. They always screw you on the time. No matter whether you're a fan of Alabama or Maryland, 2 weeks before the game, you have no idea when the game's being played.
Yeah. And so you're right. One of the things that the NBA or the NFL, they can have protocols that each team has to adhere to, and they're all sort of structured like that. The issue for college sports has been protocols are whatever the university or the league or the conference thinks that they should be. And so you've got,
and then there's Notre Dame, and they make their own rules.
Yeah. So you've got teams saying we can't play. And you see this all the time now. Duke looking for a replacement because Loyola couldn't play. Somebody else looking for a replacement. We saw this with 5 canceled bowl games to come in. So that's been the issue, is there hasn't been any sort of baseline structure to do that. And you're right. That has hurt them because, look, the NFL has added another week. ESPN has 2 wildcard games coming up in January. Like, the NFL is willing to fill any void that's left by any other sport, and particularly college football. And so, yes, we are down to a Final Four that had Cincinnati, Alabama, and Georgia playing as 3 out of those 4 teams with Michigan, and we're left with Alabama and Georgia. And so if you want to talk about expanding the college football playoff from 4 to 8 or 4 to 12, if you're going to end up with 2 SEC teams in the end, you know, what is it ultimately going to be? So teams like universities like Maryland, athletic departments have been hurt badly by COVID, not having fans, now having to have vaccinated situations, and they rely upon revenue streams, which are primarily media. And when they lost the college, or when they lost the college basketball NCAA March Madness 2 years ago, that was a huge hole, and that's not being replaced. So you can only get a certain amount of donors. And so when you have to make a change, and the issue for Maryland in basketball is, Mark Turgeon left because of whatever the dysfunction was between he and the athletics director, and didn't think there was a long-term future. That hire is going to be a critical hire for the university to find somebody that can bring some energy to the fan base in Baltimore all the way throughout Maryland to do that. Mark Turgeon, whatever his accomplishments were, he wasn't able to organize that way. And I don't know who they're going to get. There's probably some really good names out there, but they're going to have to do it because between football and men's basketball, that's 85% of all the revenues in that department. And that has to function properly in order to make the university go and be competitive throughout the Big Ten.
I saw this COVID thing got to you, dude. I mean, we got to get Springsteen back out on the road here, right? Like, this thing's costing us big time, right?
That's keeping everybody off the road. And I think, like you said, I think especially if you want to do sort of any kind of global tour. It's one thing if you want to do Nashville and sort of regional, but if you're trying to do anything that involves multiple borders, I just don't see where this is going to land anytime in the first half of this year and maybe in the second half of this year as well. That's all we can hope for.
Yeah, man. My wife's donors over in Germany. We've been trying to try to figure that out. Yeah. Pearl Jam, and there's some concerts and some stuff going on in June. And I'm like trying to leave it open a little bit, but I'm thinking to myself, I'm really glad I saw the Eagles last summer. I'm really glad I went and saw the Stones. Yeah. I'm really glad I went and saw Alanis Morissette. I hope that Rod Stewart and Cheap Trick get here, and all that. But it is another winter of our discontent, isn't it? It's really whether you love college football or hockey or whatever it is you love to do, unless it's hiking outdoor in the snow. Anything indoor right now is going to be really, really dicey again for 3 more months.
Yeah, and I think it puts, position of like Maryland having to do, proof of vaccination, maybe even eventually proof of boosters in addition to vaccination or negative testing, puts a lot of stress and strain. And when that happens, people generally say, look, if I have to go through all that, I'm probably not going to go. I'm not going to renew my tickets, a number of things. And all of that just starts to collapse. And then you literally have to rebuild. And we've seen it. You're going to see it in Baltimore this weekend. Hosting, the Steelers, I don't know that stadium will be 55 or 60% full because of all these other different conditions and the situation that the team is in. So you have to have all these things like a Jenga pile piled up just nicely. Any one thing gets pulled out and the whole pile starts to fall apart.
Well, somebody will be happy in the NFL, whether it's the Bills or the Titans or the Chiefs. Somebody's going to win. It will not be the Ravens. Marty, I appreciate you, man. Happy New Year to you. I hope at some point we can get to Amici's and get a proper meatball or get a beer or do something like that. But stay safe out there. I know you've had a little health battle here lately with the COVID thing, and I'm trying to get my booster and stay away from people and just live vicariously through Zoom with folks like you.
That's right. Thank you, buddy.
Marty Conway joining us here. He's the good professor at Georgetown University and former Baltimore Orioles executive. You can find him out on LinkedIn or Twitter or anywhere wise conversations exist. We're going to get back to the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. We're going to be at Nacho Mama's beginning next week. I'm putting a whole schedule together, trying to watch out for COVID and all this as well as we bring guests by. We want to do things safely. I have not, knock on wood, gotten sick. I want to keep it square. So, but stay in touch. You'll see our Maryland Crab Cake Tour out and all the things we do on Twitter, Facebook, and on social media. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.